Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
All right, time check now. It's around 42 minutes after 7. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back. It's Breakfast Beat. I'm Najma Bibi with you till 9 o'clock. Now, last week, tension was high in Mitchell's Plain after community members in the area gathered on the corner of Highlands and Jake's Catwell to speak out against the recent protest by Sikalo residents. This after chaos erupted when protesters barricaded roads, damaged property and set a truck alight. During the tense standoff, which happened last week, police arrested 30 people, including 9 Mitchell Plain residents, on charges of public violence. Some of the detainees were released on a warning after they appeared in court last week. Now joining us to guide us on the legal aspects of public protest is Michael Clark, senior researcher for the Socioeconomic Rights Institute of South Africa. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for chatting to us.
Good morning, Najma, and thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with the first one. What makes a protest lawful, and what process needs to be followed to ensure public abide by the law?
So essentially, protest is protected under our constitution, under Section 27 of the Section 17 of the Constitution, and so it's quite a strong right that's really enshrined in our law. And the law kind of protects any protest as long as it's peaceful and unarmed. And then we also have a law called the Regulation of Gatherings Act, or the Gatherings Act, which was passed in 1993, so it was still passed during apartheid. And the reason that it was passed was actually to govern protests and to ensure that that the violence that was experienced under apartheid did not continue after apartheid was taking place. And so because of the experience under apartheid with government and the police playing quite a significant role in causing or worsening conflicts during protests, we felt that there was an important kind of law that needed to be passed at that time to regulate protests. So essentially what the Regulation of Gatherings Act sets out is that it says that if you protest in a public place, which would be, for example, street or some kind of public area like a park, and you are more than 15 people, then you have to follow a certain legal process. Mm-hmm. And this legal process is essentially just a couple of steps. The first is to notify the municipality and the police of your intention to protest at least 7 days or at most 7 days before and at least 48 hours before protest. And then you kind of have to engage with the police if they feel like you need to change your protest plans. So, for example, sometimes they would require you to change your protest plans because of traffic disruption or because of some kind of other reason, like they think that there will be serious damage to property or something similar to that. What's really interesting, though, is that the law does actually provide for spontaneous protests to also take place. Section 12D specifically says that it is a defense against any kind of crime to say that it is a public, that it was a spontaneous protest. And so what's really interesting is that we're seeing at the moment that the police are kind of using these powers, this notification procedure, which is, by the way, is a notification procedure, not a permission asking procedure, as a way to kind of clamp down on protests and make sure that protests, especially in areas where they think that there are, for example, troublemakers or people who are likely to be quite activists, to kind of shut down protests in those areas. Hmm. And so that's kind of part of the reason why people don't always necessarily follow this legal process as well.
Now, when we are talking about protests that happen, often we see, you know, footage of it circulating online. Is the public allowed to record video footage of protests or pictures? And particularly, you know, including footage of police handling protesters?
Mm. Yes, totally. The public is completely entitled to document police officers. And if police officers try to confiscate that or try to claim that they are not allowed to do that, then that is completely incorrect. The the Policing Act totally allows for that.
Now, in the case of a protest, right, we know that police are there, they try to disperse the crowd. But if police need to search, you know, people with personal belongings of a protesters, of a protester, can the police do that? You know, can they pull someone aside and you know, search them, or would they require a warrant or something?
So the thing is that people would only be able to really search protesters if there was a reasonable, sorry, I'm just forgetting what the exact wording is. The wording, I think, is that there needs to be a reasonable suspicion or a reasonable belief that that person committed a crime. So what actually that means is that they'll only be able to really search a protester without a warrant if they are very clear about the fact that that protester actually committed a crime, or that they clearly suspect that that protester committed a crime. And that suspicion has to be reasonable, which of course means that they can't just go to any person participating in a protest and assume that that person has actually done something wrong. They would have actually had to be able to see that exact person do something or start doing something. And that's also part of why quite often it's difficult to kind of police protests, because police are kind of constantly focusing on a lot of different things, and so they kind of assume that certain people are participating in the protest when they might not even actually be participating in the protest.
At the same time, you know, when we saw this previous protest, I'm using that as our example because, you know, this happened. It's still fresh. We were made aware that police used live ammunition as well as, you know, rubber bullets to disperse crowds. Are they allowed to use live ammunition?
So that's another interesting component of what's been happening with policing sector that has really been inhibiting protests in significant ways. Essentially, the legal powers that are given to the police in terms of the Gatherings Act and in terms of it's called the National Instruction. It's a SAPS National Instruction called SAPS National Instruction Number 4 of 2014. And this kind of sets out the kind of powers that the police have in relation to public protests. And essentially they're actually legally required to create a kind of safe space to facilitate protests, and so that people can exercise their rights to protest. And this is even in the cases of kind of spontaneous protests. So actually they're not legally supposed to try and disperse crowds simply because it's an unlawful protest or simply because the protesters failed to notify the municipality or the police about the protest. And they have very strict rules about limiting the use of force. Specifically, it kind of says that the use of force should be a last resort that the police use, in an absolute last resort after other measures have failed. And other measures include things like negotiating with the protesters, trying to warn the protesters, trying to kind of mitigate it by like ensuring that protesters don't kind of cause damage or other kind of things to property. And it really does say that the use of force must be avoided at all costs, and that police must display the highest degree of tolerance. And even in those circumstances, the police are supposed to then use measures that are less lethal and less likely to be harmful to protesters. Something like, for example, tear gas canisters, or, for example, a water cannon. Something that would not necessarily be as harmful as necessarily using rubber bullets. And especially in the case of rubber bullets, you cannot use rubber bullets to indiscriminately just shoot at a crowd. That is entirely unlawful. What you have to do is you have to use it in very specific, careful circumstances where you're trying to dissuade someone from actually, essentially physically attacking or harming someone else.
All right. Michael, we are out of time. So very briefly, in terms of wrapping up, what should someone do when they are arrested in a protest? And, you know, we just had an interview earlier on around, you know, an incident where a guest, the guest that we had on, you know, the person was a bystander and was shot. And, you know, they had an incident where they had to be, you know, admitted to hospital. In these cases, we find that, you know, we can say it's police brutality. So perhaps just elaborating on that very briefly.
Sure. So essentially, the most important thing is just to make sure that you don't kind of say anything without having a lawyer present. There are organizations that will allow you to kind of have to get lawyers for free. Some of them are the Legal Resources Center. Some of them are, for example, the Right to Protest organization. They can help assist people by getting lawyers, especially if you participated in a protest, and then kind of just make sure that you don't say anything to incriminate yourself. Make sure that that those are the first two most important things, I would say.
All right, Michael, let's leave it there, but thanks for chatting to us. I wish we could go on, but we have to wrap up there. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you very much.
All right, that there, Michael Clark, Senior Researcher at Socioeconomic Rights Institute of South Africa, talking to us on what you need to know regarding rights of public engagement protest. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we've got traffic, market updates, and your quiz. So stay tuned for that one.
Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.